he says flatly, as we enter the kitchen. When I notice Steve at the counter, I jump in surprise. I know it's crazy, but I keep forgetting about him. It's like my brain isn't capable of handling more than one crisis at a time, and Reed possibly going to jail is the only thing I can focus on. Each time I see Steve, it's almost like I'm hit with the news that he's alive over and over again. I don't miss the way his blue eyes narrow as they land on Reed's arm around my shoulders. Steve's expression looks vaguely like parental disapproval, something I haven't experienced before. Mom was as easygoing as they came. I slide out from under Reed's arm under the pretense of going to the refrigerator. "Want something?" I offer. Reed gives me an amused smile.
"Sure. What are you offering?"
Jerk. He knows exactly why I left him at the kitchen doorway, and now he's making fun of me for it. Resisting the urge to give him the finger, I grab a container of yogurt. Callum claps his hands together to get our attention.
"Get a spoon and meet me in the study."
"Us?" Steve corrects. Callum waves a hand as he walks away. "Stop it with the innuendo," I hiss to Reed as I grab a spoon out of the drawer.
"Why? Dad knows about us."
"But Steve doesn't," I point out. "It's weird, okay? Let's just pretend to be..." Reed quirks an eyebrow. "Friends," I finish, because all the alternatives are too weird.
"Pretend? I thought we were friends. I'm hurt."
He slaps an exaggerated hand over his chest. "You're not now, but I can change that." I wave my spoon at him threateningly. "I'm not afraid to get physical with you, pal."
"I can't wait."
His hand falls to my hip and drags me closer.
"Why don't you get physical with me right now?"
I lick my lips, and his gaze zeroes in on my mouth.
"Reed! Ella!" Callum yells. "Study! Now!"
I jerk away. "Let's go." I swear I hear him say "cockblocker" under his breath. In Callum's office, we find Steve leaning against the desk while Callum paces. All traces of humor evaporate when we spot Halston Greer sitting in one of the leather club chairs situated in front of the desk.
"Mr. Greer," Reed says stiffly.
Greer rises to his feet.
"Reed, how are you doing, son?"
Reed reaches around me to shake the lawyer's hand. "Should I leave?" I ask awkwardly.
"No, this involves you, Ella,"
Callum answers. Reed comes to my side immediately and places a protective hand at my back. I notice for the first time that Callum's tie is askew and his hair is sticking up, as if he's dragged his hand through it 100 times. My gaze skips over to Steve, who's wearing jeans and a loose-hanging white shirt. He doesn't appear to be concerned. I don't know who to take my emotional cues from. My eyes bounce between the rattled Callum and the calm Steve. Does this have to do with me and not the murder case?
"You should sit down."
This comes from Greer. I shake my head. "No, I'll stand." Sitting seems dangerous. It takes longer to get up from a seated position and run than it does if I'm already on both legs.
"Dad,"
Reed prompts. Callum sighs, this time scrubbing the heel of his hand down one side of his face.
"Judge Delacorte came to me with an interesting offer."
He pauses.
"It's regarding the DNA they found under Brooke's fingernails."
Reed frowns.
"What about it?"
"Delacorte's willing to lose this evidence."
My jaw hits the floor. Daniel's father is a judge, and he's willing to lose evidence? That's the most corrupt thing I've ever heard. "What's the price?" I demand. Callum turns toward me.
Daniel would be allowed to come back to Asta Park. You would recant all your accusations and admit you took the drugs willingly. He glances at his son. When you and your brothers found her, she made up a story so you wouldn't dislike her more than you already did. That's the price.
Every atom inside of me revolts at Callum's scenario. Reed erupts like a volcano.
That motherfucker. No way.
If I do it, I take a breath. Will Reed's charges be dropped? Will the case go away? I direct my questions to the lawyer.
You're not doing this,
Reed insists, his hand clamping over my arm. I jerk out of his grasp and advance on the lawyer. If I do this, I repeat through gritted teeth, will Reed be saved? Behind me, Reed yells at his father for even entertaining the idea. Callum tries to soothe him, explaining that he's not recommending I take this path. But obviously he wants me to, or he wouldn't have brought it up in the first place. It hurts a little, but I get it. Callum's trying to save his son from life in prison. Steve, meanwhile, says nothing. He's just taking it all in. But I don't care about any of the other men in this office. Only the lawyer has the answer I need. Greer folds his perfectly manicured hands in his lap, clear-eyed and unruffled by all the chaos in the room. I'm not sure what he sees when he looks at me. A frail girl? A stupid one? A silly one? How about one who loves her boyfriend so much she'd be willing to swallow swords for him? This would be nothing. A few months of Daniel Delacorte in my life, a few more awful Astor Park kids whispering behind my back, a reputation as a drug addict. All of that, in exchange for Reed's freedom. It'd be worth it.
It can't hurt, Greer finally admits.
And Reed loses it again.
Chapter 10. Reed.
No way!
At the attorney's words, I immediately abandon Dad and storm over to Ella's side, stepping between her and the snake before any more damage can be done. That's absolutely not happening, ever. Ella shakes me off.
What about the video evidence?
It can all disappear, Greer replies. It seems that getting rid of evidence is something Delacorte has some experience with.
I can't believe any of you would even consider this a good idea. Daniel shouldn't be within 100 miles of Ella, I say hotly. This is so fucked up.
Language, my dad chides, as if he's ever cared before when I've dropped F-bombs.
Is it?
Ella counters.
How about going to prison for 25 years? If swallowing my pride means keeping you free, it doesn't sound fucked up to me.
Nobody reprimands Ella for her language, which just pisses me off more. I turn toward Dad because he's the one who needs convincing. Ella can't pull off this trade by herself. Only Dad and this gutter lawyer can.
This is the lowest thing ever. That asshole is a psycho, and you'd bring him back? Worse, you'd subject Ella to a lifetime of harassment?
Dad glares at me.
I'm trying to keep you out of prison. It's not a great idea, but it's one you both deserve to hear. You want me to treat you two like adults? Then you get to make the adult decisions.
He snaps.
I'm making it then. Daniel stays where he is and we win this case on the merits because I didn't fucking kill her.
I enunciate each word so that there's no mistake. Ella grabs my wrist.
Reed, please.
Please what? Do you know what it'll be like at school if you say you lied about Daniel? You wouldn't be able to walk the halls alone. One of us would have to be with you at all times. Jordan would tear you up.
Do you think I care about that? It'll only be for a few more months.
And what about next year? I won't be around to protect you,
I remind her. At the desk, I see Steve narrow his eyes.
I appreciate the sentiment, Reed, but Ella doesn't need your protection. She has her father to protect her.
He purses his lips.
In fact, I think it's time for me to take my daughter home.
My blood runs cold. Ella's grip tightens on my fingers. Steve straightens from the desk.
Callum, I appreciate you taking care of her when I was gone. But I'm Ella's father. You have your hands full with your own children right now.
Ella and I don't need to be here. Oh, hell no. She's not leaving me or this house. Dad, I say in warning. Steve, your place hasn't been released yet, Callum reminds the other man, and it doesn't sound like it will be for a while. He looks at the attorney for confirmation. Greer nods. The sheriff's office said they'll be collecting evidence for another 2 weeks, at least. That's fine. Dinah and I procured the penthouse suite at the Hollow Oaks. Steve reaches into his pocket and pulls out a plastic key card. I've added your name to the reservation, Ella. Here's your key. She makes no move toward it. No, I'm not sleeping in the same house as Dinah. Hastily, she adds. No offense. Ella's a royal, I say coldly. Steve's gaze falls to where Ella's hand is white-knuckling my wrist. You better hope not, he murmurs in amusement. Be reasonable, Steve, Dad says. Let's get you settled first. We have a number of legal matters to work out. This is new for everyone. Ella's 17, which means she's still under her parents' authority. Isn't that right, Houston? The lawyer tips his head. That is correct. He rises and shakes out his pant legs. It sounds like all of you have private matters to work through. I'll get out of your way now. He stops when he's halfway to the door and frowns at me. I assume I don't need to tell you to stay away from the funeral on Saturday. I frown back. What funeral? Brooks, Dad says tightly, before glancing at Greer. And no, Reed won't be attending. Good. I can't stop a bite of sarcasm. What happened to your whole stand united as a family thing? Greer's response is just as biting. You can stand united anywhere but that funeral home, and for the love of God, Reed, keep your nose clean. No more fights at school, no bullshit, all right? His eyes fall to Ella with an unspoken warning. My biggest weakness? No way. Ella's the steel in my spine, but Greer only sees her as evidence of my motive. I step closer to her. He shakes his head and turns to Dad, adding, Let me know if you want me to arrange another meeting with Delacorte. There's no meeting! I snap at them. Dad pats the lawyer on the back. I'll call you. Frustration jams in my throat. It's like I'm not even here. And if no one's going to listen to me, then there's no point in being here. Let's go, I tell Ella. I pull her out of the study without waiting for her agreement, or anyone else's. A minute later, we're upstairs, and I throw open her bedroom door and hustle her inside. This is stupid, she blurts out. I'm not moving into some hotel with Steve and that horrible woman. Nope, I agree, watching as she climbs onto her bed. Her uniform skirt rides up, and I get a nice view of her ass before she sits down and draws her legs up under her chin. And you're being stupid, too, she grumbles. I think we should take Delacorte's deal. Nope, I say again. Reed. Ella. It would keep you out of prison. No, it would keep me in that bastard's pocket for the rest of my life. It's not happening, babe. Seriously. So get the idea out of your head. Fine, let's say you're not taking the deal. I'm not. Then what do we do now? I take off my white dress shirt and kick off my shoes. Wearing my pants and a wife beater, I join Ella on the bed and draw her into my arms. She snuggles up against me, but only for a brief moment. Then she's sitting up again, scowling at me. I asked you a question, she grumbles. I exhale in frustration. There's nothing for us to do, Ella. It's Greer's job to deal with everything. Well, he's not doing a very good job of it if he's recommending you make deals with shady judges. Her cheeks redden with anger. Let's make a list. A list of what? I ask blankly. All the people who could have killed Brooke. She jumps off the bed and hurries to her desk, where she grabs her laptop. Other than Dinah, who else was she close to? Nobody, as far as I know, I admit. Ella sits on the edge of the bed, opening the laptop. That's not an acceptable answer. Exasperation shoots through me. It's the only answer I've got. Brooke didn't have any friends. But she had enemies. That's what you said, right? She pulls up a search engine and types Brooke's name into it. About a million results pop up for a million different Brooke Davidsons. So it's just a matter of finding out who those enemies are. I rise up on my elbows. So you're what, Lois Lane now? You're going to solve this case on your own? Do you have a better idea? She counters. I sigh. Dad's got investigators. They found you, remember? Ella's hand pauses over the mouse, but her hesitation lasts only for a second before she clicks on what appears to be Brooke's Facebook page. While the page loads, she throws me a thoughtful glance.
"The funeral," she announces.
"What about it?" I ask cautiously. I don't like where she's going with this.
"I think I should go."
I sit up in a rush. "No way. Greer said we couldn't go."
"No, he said you couldn't go."
Her gaze returns to the screen. "Hey, did you know Brooke had a BA from North Carolina State?" I ignore the useless tidbit.
"You're not going to that funeral, Ella," I growl.
"Why not? It's the best way to get an idea of who was close to Brooke. I can see who shows up and..." She gasps.
"What if the killer shows up?"
Closing my eyes, I try to will up some much-needed patience. "Babe," I open my eyes, "do you really think whoever killed Brooke is going to waltz up and say, 'Hey guys, I'm a murderer'?" Indignation flashes in her blue eyes.
"Of course not. But haven't you ever watched those crime documentaries on TV? Those FBI commentators always talk about how killers will return to the scene of the crime or attend the victim's funeral as a way to taunt the police."
I stare at her in disbelief, but she's already focused on the laptop again.
"I don't want you going to the funeral," I grind out.
Ella doesn't even look my way as she says, "Too fucking bad."
Chapter 11. Ella.
"What nun did you kill for that outfit?" Easton asks when I climb into his pickup early Saturday morning. I slap the dashboard. "Shut up and drive."
He obediently puts the truck in gear and peels down the driveway toward the massive steel gates that block the mansion from the main road.
"Why? Who's after us? Is it Steve?"
Even though Steve is now living with Dinah in their suite of hotel rooms at the Hollow Oaks, he's still lurking around the mansion all the time. He puts Callum in a good mood, but I feel awkward around him and try to avoid spending time with him. I guess that hasn't escaped anyone's notice. "It's Reed," I reply. "He didn't want me to go today."
"Yeah, he wasn't thrilled about me going either."
I glance out the back window to make sure Reed isn't running after the truck or anything. He was unhappy when I left, but like I told him the other night, too bad. I plan on scoping out every single person who attends Brooke's service today. Besides, someone needs to be there with Callum today while his fiancé is being buried. I can't let him do that alone, and since Reed is out of the question, and the twins refused, that leaves me and Easton. Callum went on ahead of us with his driver, Durand, because he has business in the city after the service.
"So what do you do? Sex him into submission? Is he passed out in orgasmic bliss?"
"Shut up." I find my girl power mix on my phone and plug the music in. But that doesn't silence Easton. Instead, he just shouts over the lyrics.
"Are you still not putting out? Poor guy's balls are probably purple by now."
"I'm not talking about my sex life with you," I inform him, and turn the music up even higher. Easton spends the next 5 miles laughing. The sad truth is, Reed's the one who's torturing us. For the last 3 nights, he slept in my bed again, and we fooled around a ton. He's fine with me touching him everywhere. He loves it when I go down on him, and he's equally generous in return. Heck, he'd spend hours with his head between my legs if I let him. But the final deed? That's off the table until... this Brooke thing, as he calls it, isn't hanging over our heads. I'm in a weird state of satisfaction and anticipation. Reed's giving me nearly everything, but it's still not enough. Still, I know that if our situations were reversed, he'd totally respect my wishes. So I have to respect his. Which sucks. When we arrive at the funeral home, Callum is waiting for us at the entrance. He's wearing a black suit that probably cost more than my car, and his hair is slicked back away from his face, which makes him look younger. "You didn't have to wait for us," I say when we reach him. He shakes his head.
"You heard Halston.
We need to show family unity. So if we're going to be here together, then everyone will leave believing we're a happy, non-guilty group.
I don't say it out loud, but I'm pretty sure no one in there is going to be impressed with a royal show of strength, considering we're all members of the alleged murderer's family. The three of us enter the somber-looking building, and Callum leads us to an arched doorway to our left. Inside is a small chapel with rows of polished wooden pews, a raised area with a podium, and a casket. My pulse speeds up at the sight. Oh my God, I can't believe Brooke is actually in there. As a morbid thought occurs to me, I stand on my tiptoes to whisper in Callum's ear. Did they do an autopsy on her? He responds with a grim nod.
Results haven't come back yet.
He pauses.
I assume they'll conduct DNA testing on the, fetus as well.
The thought makes me sick, because for the first time since this all started, it suddenly occurs to me that two people died in that penthouse. Brooke and an innocent baby. Swallowing a rush of bile, I force my gaze away from the sleek black box. Instead, I stare at the huge framed photograph that sits on an easel beside it. Brooke might have been an awful person, but even I can't deny that she was beautiful. The picture they picked shows a smiling Brooke in a pretty patterned sundress. Her blonde hair is loose, and her blue eyes are sparkling as she beams at the camera. She looks gorgeous.
Shit, this is depressing,
Easton mumbles. It totally is. I was so poor growing up that I couldn't afford a funeral for my mom. The memorial service was twice the cost of the cremation, so I decided not to have a service. No one would have attended it anyway. Mom would have liked it, though.
Coming?
Easton prompts, nodding his head toward the front. I follow his gaze to the casket. It's open, but I refuse to go up. So I shake my head and find a seat near the middle while Easton ambles up the center aisle, hands tucked into his pockets. His suit coat strains across his broad shoulders as he leans forward. I wonder what he sees. Glancing around the room, I'm a bit surprised by the turnout, or rather the lack of turnout. There are fewer than 10 people in attendance. I guess Brooke really didn't have any friends.
Get out!
I jerk at the sound of Dinah's high-pitched wail. Well, Brooke had one friend, at least. It takes a second to register that Dinah is speaking to us. She's glaring daggers at me and Easton, who's just coming back from the casket.
This is shameful,
she screams, and I don't think I've ever seen her look so unhinged before. Her face is one red splotch, her green eyes wild with outrage.
You royals don't belong here, and you!
She's talking to me now.
You're not even family. Get out, all of you!
I don't know what not guilty looks like, but I'm putting Dinah at the top of my suspects list. A woman who'd blackmail some poor guy into her bed is a woman who'd do other terrible things. Callum stalks over, a hard look in his eyes. Steve, who's in a similar black suit, tails him. Steve's gaze flicks at my black sack of a dress that I found on the first sale rack at the mall department store. It's two sizes too big, but the only other black dress I have is a bodycon one from my mother. That was absolutely too morbid and much too sexy to wear to a funeral.
We're not going anywhere,
Callum says tightly.
In fact, we have more right to be here than you, Dinah. I was engaged to marry her for Pete's sake.
You didn't even love her,
Dinah growls. She's trembling so violently that her entire body is swaying.
She was nothing but a sex toy for you.
My gaze darts around the room to see if anyone heard that. They all did. Every single pair of eyes is glued to this confrontation, including the minister's. He's frowning at us from the podium, and I'm not the only one who notices.
Dinah.
Steve's voice is low and more commanding than I've ever heard it. Usually he speaks in an easygoing manner, but not right now.
You're making a spectacle of yourself.
I don't care, she roars. They don't belong here. She was my friend. She was like a sister to me.
She was Callum's fiancé,
Steve snaps.
Whatever feelings he may or may not have had for her, we know what her feelings were. She loved Callum. She'd want him here.
That shuts Dinah up. For about half a second. Then she aims her furious gaze at me.
Well, she doesn't belong here, then.
Steve's eyes narrow into dangerous slits.
Like hell she doesn't. Ella's my daughter.
She's been your daughter for all of 5 minutes. I'm your goddamn wife. The minister clears his throat, loudly. I guess he doesn't appreciate her taking the Lord's name in vain in the middle of a chapel.
You're acting like a child, Steve says harshly. And you're embarrassing yourself, so I suggest you sit down before you're the one who gets thrown out of here.
That shuts her up for good. With a thunderous glower in our direction, she stomps to the front of the room and slams her ass down on a pew.
I'm sorry about that.
Steve apologizes, but he's only looking at me. She's a little emotional. Easton snorts softly as if to say,
a little.
Callum gives a curt nod.
Let's just sit down. The service is about to begin.
I breathe in relief when Steve walks away to join his horrible wife. I'm glad he's not sitting with us. Every time someone reminds me that I'm his daughter, my discomfort skyrockets. To my surprise, Callum abandons us too, settling onto a front row pew on the opposite aisle of the O'Hallorans.
He's giving a speech,
Easton tells me. My eyebrows soar.
Seriously? He was her fiancé,
is the shrugged response.
Right.
I keep forgetting it's not public knowledge that Callum hated Brooke by the end of their destructive relationship.
It'd look suspicious if he... Ah, fuck.
Easton stops abruptly, his gaze swinging to the right. Tension coils in my neck when I see what made him curse. The police detective who came to Astor Park earlier this week, Cousins, has entered the chapel. A short, dark-haired woman is at his side. They both have shiny gold badges clipped to their belts. As uneasy as their presence makes me, I can't help but feel a burst of triumph. I wish Reed were here so I could say, "See, the cops are here because they also think the killer might show up."
They better not try to interview us,
I mumble to Easton as I scrutinize the guests. One of them could be the killer. My gaze pauses on the back of Callum's head. He had motive, but there's no way he would let his son take the heat for a crime he committed. Plus, Callum was in D.C. with us. My gaze moves to Steve. But what would be the motive? If it was Dinah in the casket, he'd be my prime suspect, but he's been gone for 9 months, which means there's no way he could have been the father of Brooke's baby. I dismiss him. The other handful of people I don't know.
It must be one of them.
But who?
Dad's lawyers are still stalling about that,
Easton mumbles back.
If it happens, it'll be next week. They talked to Wade, though.
I suck in a breath.
They did?
I wonder why Val didn't say anything, but then I think, when would she have had the opportunity? I've barely spent any time with my best friend since this whole mess began. I know she misses me, and I miss her too, but it's hard to hang out and gossip and have a good time when life is so screwed up right now.
They asked him all these questions about Reed's fighting,
Easton confesses,
and about all the chicks Reed's been with.
What the hell? Why is that important? I'm oddly resentful about that. I don't like the idea of these cops dissecting Reed's previous relationships, or his current one with me.
I don't know. Just telling you what Wade said. That was pretty much it. They didn't even talk to him about Brooke or...
He halts again.
Okay, seriously? This is just weird.
When I turn again, this time it's to find Gideon walking in our direction. Easton mutters to me out of the side of his mouth,
Why is Gid here? Who drives 3 hours to attend a funeral of some bitch he couldn't even stand?
I asked him to come, I admit. He gapes at me.
Why?
Because I need to talk to him. I don't offer any other details, and Easton doesn't have time to cross-examine me, because Gideon reaches us.
Hey.
The eldest royal murmurs. His eyes aren't on us, though. He's staring at Brooke's casket. Is he imagining Dinah there? I wouldn't be surprised if he was. Steve's wife has been blackmailing Gideon for 6 months, maybe longer. I move down to make some space, and he sits beside Easton. Gideon's a royal anomaly. He's a little thinner than his younger brothers, and his hair isn't as dark. He has those blue eyes, though. How are classes? I ask awkwardly.
Fine.
I haven't spent much time with Gideon at all because he goes to college a few hours away. I only know a handful of things about him. He's a swimmer. He dated Savannah Montgomery. He's sleeping with, or has slept with, Dinah. He sends dirty pictures to his girlfriend. If Gideon would kill anyone, it'd be Dinah. But Dinah and Brooke look similar. They both have blonde hair styled in that magazine cover blowout fashion. They're both skinny as sticks with huge racks. From the back, they could easily be mistaken for sisters. Thanks for coming, I tell him. Covertly, I study his face, which is hard and tense. Is that what guilt looks like?
Still not sure why you summoned me,
is the terse reply. I hesitate. Can you stick around after the service? It feels weird discussing stuff while... I nod toward the enormous picture of Brooke. He nods back.
Yeah, we can talk after.
Easton sighs, also staring at the photo.
I hate funerals.
I've never been to one before, I confess.
What about your mom?
He asks with a frown. Didn't have the money for it. I was able to pay for a cremation, and then I took her ashes and threw them in the ocean. Gideon turns to me with surprised eyes, at the same time that Easton says,
No way.
Yes way, I say, unsure of why they're both staring at me.
We spread our mom's ashes in the Atlantic,
Gideon says quietly.
Dad was going to bury her, but the twins were freaked out about worms eating their way into the coffin. They watched some Discovery Channel special on it or some shit. So he caved and agreed to the cremation.
A genuine smile spreads across Easton's face, not the cocky fake grin he constantly wears, but a soft, honest one. We took the urn out and waited for the sun to rise, because mornings were her favorite. At first there was no wind, and the water was like glass. Gideon picks up the story.
But the minute the ashes hit the water, a huge gust came out of nowhere, and the tide rolled out so far, I swear I could have walked a mile without the sea hitting my knees.
Easton nods. It was like the ocean wanted her. We sit silently for a moment, thinking about our own losses. The grief over my mom's death doesn't feel so sharp today, not while I'm sandwiched between the broad shoulders of the two royal brothers. That's a beautiful memory, I whisper. My suspicion that Gideon is the killer wanes. He loved his mother so much. Could he really murder a woman? Easton grins impishly.
I like that our moms are watching over us from one coast to another.
I can't help but smile back. Me too. My gaze strays to the front row, where Steve and Dinah sit, and my smile fades when I notice that Steve has his arm stretched across the back of Dinah's chair. She's leaning against him, her shoulders shaking slightly. Her grief reminds me of why we're all here. This isn't some mixer in a church basement. It's a funeral for a woman who was only 10 years older than me. Brooke was young, and no matter her flaws, she didn't deserve to die, especially not a violent death. Maybe Dinah isn't the killer at all. She's the only one here who's showing any true grief. The minister walks up to the podium and asks for us to all take our seats.
Friends and loved ones, we are gathered here today to mourn the passing of Brooke Anna Davidson. Let us stand together, join hands, and pray.
The gray-haired man intones. Music starts playing as we all rise. The boys brush their hands down the front of their ties. I shake out my dress and clasp their hands, wishing Reed were here. After a short moment of silence, the minister's low voice recites a scripture about how there's a time and season for everything. Apparently this was Brooke's time to die, at the age of 27. He doesn't mention Brooke's unborn child at all, which makes me wonder if maybe the police are keeping that detail from the public. At the end of the prayer, he instructs us to sit, and then Callum strides to the podium.
Awkward, Easton mutters under his breath.
If Callum thought so, you'd never guess it. He calmly speaks of Brooke's charitable work, her devotion to her friends, and her love of the ocean, ending with a declaration that she will be missed. It's short, but surprisingly heartfelt. When he's done speaking, he nods politely in Dinah's direction and retakes his seat. Dinah has the decency not to freak out on him again. She simply nods back. At the podium once more, the minister asks if anyone else has any memory they would like to share. Everyone seems to pivot toward Dinah, whose only response is to sob loudly. The minister closes with another prayer, and then invites everyone to remain for refreshments served in the next room. All in all, the service takes less than 10 minutes, and something about the speed of it and the lack of people here for Brooke chokes me up.
You crying? Easton asks with a note of worry.
This is just awful.
What? The funeral in general, or that Dad got up to speak?
The funeral. There's hardly anyone here.
He surveys the room.
Guess she wasn't a very nice person.
Did Brooke have any family? I strain to remember if she ever told me. I don't think I ever asked. Her mom died when she was young, I know that much.
Maybe, but I don't think I'd have more people at mine, I admit. I barely know anyone. Nah, every kiss-ass in the state would be here to extend their sympathies to Callum. It'd be big. Not as big as mine, but it'd be good-sized. Nothing's ever as big as yours, is it, East?
Gid says dryly. My eyes widen in surprise. I don't think I've ever heard him make a joke.
Easton cackles. You know it, bro.
His laugh is a little too loud for Callum, who turns around to glare at us. Easton shuts up immediately, looking slightly abashed. Gideon, on the other hand, glares right back. He folds his arms across his chest, as if daring his father to come over and yell at us. Callum turns back to Steve with a sigh of resignation.
Ready to talk? Gideon asks.
Nodding, I follow the boys out of the aisle and the three of us walk into the hallway. Everyone else is moving into the next room to take the minister up on the refreshments offer, but we stay put.
Reed and I were talking the other night. I start,
though technically I was talking and Reed was telling me I was nuts.
We think maybe we should look into Brooke's past, figure out if there's anyone else who might have wanted her.
I lower my voice. Dead.
I was hoping you could help with that.
He looked startled.
How exactly can I help? I barely knew Brooke.
Easton, however, instantly understands why I've come to Gideon with this.
Yeah, but you're boning Dinah, and she knew Brooke better than anyone.
Gideon clenches his jaw.
Are you serious right now? Are you suggesting I hop back into bed with that bitch,
he hisses,
just to try to squeeze some info out of her?
The anger reddening his face makes me take a timid step back. This is the first time I've seen Gideon lose his temper. He's always been the most level-headed of the royals.
I'm not asking you to sleep with her, I protest, just to grill her for some details.
He looks incredulous.
Are you really that naive, Ella? You think I can spend a second with that woman without her trying to hump me?
I cringe in embarrassment.
So forget it, he snaps. Ever since Brooke died, Dinah's been too upset to even pick up the phone and call me. As long as she doesn't remember I exist, I get to live my fucking life without having to deal with her. Hopefully with Steve back, she'll forget I ever existed.
I'm sorry, I whisper. It was a stupid idea.
Beside me, Easton shakes his head in disapproval. Wow, Gid, that's harsh. You don't want to help Reed?
His brother's jaw drops.
I can't believe you just said that to me. Of course I want to help Reed.
Yeah? Well, we both know he'd bang every cougar in the state if it was your neck on the line. Reed would do whatever it took to save you.
I can't disagree with that.
Reed is loyal to his core. He'd die for his family.
Hell, he might have even killed for it.
Stop it. I banish the awful thought and focus on Gideon.
Look, you don't have to do it if you're not comfortable. All I'm asking is, if you're around Dinah for some reason, maybe you can ask her if there's anyone out there who may have hated Brooke.
Like, what about any of these people inside?
He goes quiet for a moment. Fine, I'll see what I can do.
Thank...
But only if you do something for me.
He interjects. I wrinkle my forehead.
What? When are you moving in with Steve?
What?
I'm even more bewildered. When are you moving in with Steve?
He repeats.
Why would she move in with Steve?
Easton demands.
Because he's her father?
Gideon says impatiently, before focusing on me again.
Dinah must keep all her blackmail shit at her place. I need you to find it and get it back for me.
I frown. Even if I was moving in with Steve, which I don't want to ever, I wouldn't know the first place to look.
There must be a safe or something, he insists.
Okay, and when I find this mythical safe, I'll open it using the power of my brain or something.
Gideon shrugs. I'm not opposed to sledgehammering that shit out of the wall. We'll tell Steve you and Reed got into a fight.
I gape at him. That's a terrible idea, and I'm not going to do it.
Gideon grabs my arm. I'm not the only one who you could save.
His voice is low, deadly.
Savannah's up to her eyeballs in this. Dinah's got a DA in her pocket. He visited me up at state and showed me 2 criminal complaints, 1 for Sav and 1 for me. They were going to charge us with things I didn't even know were illegal.
Sympathy tugs at me as I stare at his pale face. There's a bead of sweat along the top of his forehead. I don't know, I say slowly.
At least think about it,
he begs. The fingers at my elbow are tight and desperate. I'll do what I can, I finally say. I might not be close with Gideon or Savannah, but what Dinah is doing to them isn't right.
Thank you.
But only if you return the favor, I counter, raising one eyebrow.
I'll do what I can, he mimics.
So Savannah can actually get in trouble for sending you those naked pics? Easton asks his brother as we walk toward the exit.
Dinah and the DA claim she can, but I don't know.
Gideon admits.
I didn't want to take the risk, so I broke up with her. I was hoping it would remove her from the equation, but...
He curses softly.
Dinah never lets me forget that Sav is involved in all this. It's her go-to threat when I'm not feeling cooperative.
Wow, Every time I think Dinah O'Halloran can't get any worse, the woman proves me wrong. Hands in his pockets, he lumbers past us toward the parking lot. He pauses with his hand on his car door and looks over his shoulder.
Wanna know who's here?
He jerks his head toward the entrance.
Check the guest book.
Easton and I exchange a wide-eyed, why didn't I think of that, look.
Anyway, I gotta go,
Gideon mutters.
It's a long drive back to school.
Later, bro, Easton calls out. Gideon gives us a brisk wave before climbing into his car and driving off. I feel so sorry for him, I admit to Easton. His blue eyes flicker with pain.
Yeah, so do I.
Let's go look at that guest book. I turn to head back inside, only to run into Callum.
You kids heading home? He asks.
Steve is right behind him. Dinah must still be inside, where the guest book is. Easton waves his keys.
In a sec, I gotta use the little boy's room.
His father nods.
Good, and I'd prefer it if you stayed in tonight.
He gives Easton a warning look.
No wild parties or dogfights, I mean it.
We'll order some takeout and chill by the pool, Easton promises, surprisingly obliging. He tilts his phone toward me, indicating that he'll take a picture of the guest book, while I stall the dads.
I'll be right back.
The moment that Easton is out of earshot, Steve speaks up.
Actually, I'd like Ella to come back with me.
My eyes immediately seek out Callum's. He must see my panicked expression, because he's quick to shoot down Steve's request.
That's not a good idea. I don't think Ella should be around Dinah tonight.
I say a silent thank you to Callum, but Steve clearly isn't happy about this.
With all due respect, Callum, Ella is my daughter, not yours.
I've been more than accommodating about letting her remain with you, temporarily. But I'll be honest, I'm not comfortable with her living in your house any longer. Callum frowns.
And why is that?
How many times do we need to go through this? Steve sounds impatient.
It's not an ideal environment for her. Not when Reed is facing a life sentence. Not when the cops are sniffing around and talking to everyone at Ella's school. Not when...
Callum angrily cuts him off.
Your wife verbally attacked Ella before the service. Do you truly believe that your home, Dinah's home, is a better environment for Ella right now? Because you're delusional if you think that.
Steve's blue eyes darken to a metallic cobalt.
Dinah might be unstable, but she's not charged with murder now, is she, Callum? And Ella is my daughter. This isn't about you, Steve,
Callum growls.
Contrary to what you believe, the world does not revolve around you. I've been Ella's guardian for months. I've clothed her and fed her and made sure her every need is met. At the moment, I am the closest thing this girl has to a father.
He's right. And for some reason, I get a little choked up at Callum's impassioned speech. Other than my mom, nobody has ever really fought for me. Nobody has cared about meeting my every need. Swallowing, I speak up in a small voice. I want to go back with Easton. Steve narrows his eyes at me. There's a glint of betrayal there, but it doesn't trigger any guilt on my part. Please, I add, locking my gaze with Steve's. You said so yourself. Dinah's super emotional right now. It'll be better for both of us if I'm not around her, at least for a little while. Besides, the Royals' house is really close to the bakery.
The bakery?
He says blankly.
Her job, Callum clarifies in a brusque tone.
I work mornings at a bakery right near the school, I explain. If I stay in the city with you, it'll add another 30 minutes to my drive, and I already have to wake up at dawn. So, yeah, this makes more sense for me. I hold my breath as I await his answer. After a long pause, Steve's head jerks in a nod.
Fine. You can go back to Callum's.
But it's not permanent, Ella. A warning note rings in his voice.
I need you to remember that.
Chapter 12. Ella. Anything special you want from the bakery this morning? I ask Reed, as he pulls into the parking lot in front of the French Twist. From the driver's seat, he turns to glower at me.
Are you trying to bribe me with food?
I roll my eyes. No, I'm just trying to be a nice girlfriend. And would you quit sulking already? The funeral was 2 days ago. You can't still be mad at me.
I'm not mad at you. I'm disappointed, he says solemnly.
My jaw falls open. Oh my God, don't you dare give me that I'm not mad, I'm disappointed crap. I get it. You didn't want me to go, but I did, and it's over, and you need to move on. Plus, we got that list. Although the guest book turned out to be worthless, because Callum told us that his investigators had already looked into the 6 people I didn't know at the funeral. They were all accounted for the night of Brooke's death. To say that Easton and I were bummed is an understatement.
Which was a total dead end.
Reed runs a hand through his dark hair.
I don't like how the detectives showed up, he mumbles. That means they're watching all of us.
His distressed expression makes my heart ache. We knew they'd be watching, I remind him, sliding closer so I can rest my chin on his shoulder. Your lawyer warned us about that.
I know, but that doesn't mean I have to like it.
His voice is low and tortured.
Honestly, it's
what? I ask when he doesn't go on. Reed's distress turns into pure torment.
It's getting harder to convince myself that this whole mess is going to go away. First there was the DNA evidence, then Judge Delacorte's shady offer, and the cops interviewing everyone I know. It's all starting to feel too real.
I bite hard on my lower lip. It is real. That's what I've been trying to tell you since you got arrested.
I know, he says again. But I was hoping...
This time he doesn't have to finish, because I know exactly what he was hoping for. That the charges would magically be dropped. That the person who killed Brooke would walk into the police station and confess. But none of that is happening, and maybe it's time Reed fully understood how much trouble he's actually in. He might go to prison. Still, I can't bring myself to toss another dose of reality his way. So I simply cup his chin and twist his head toward mine. Our lips meet in a soft, slow kiss, and then we pull apart, resting our foreheads against each other. For once, he doesn't force a smile and try to tell me that everything will be okay. So I do it for him. We'll get through this, I proclaim, with confidence I don't feel. He just nods, before gesturing to the bakery's front window.
You should go. You'll be late for work.
Don't overdo it with the weights this morning, okay? Reed's doctor cleared him for practice this week, but with some restrictions. Even though his stab wound is healing nicely, the doctor said that he shouldn't push himself too hard.
I won't,
he promises. I give him another quick kiss and hop out of the car, hurrying toward the French Twist. My boss is kneading dough when I walk into the kitchen. The gray of the stainless steel countertop is barely visible under the coating of flour. Behind her is a stack of bowls that need to be washed. I hang up my jacket and am rolling up my sleeves when she suddenly seems to notice me.
Ella, you're here.
She blows a strand of hair away from her forehead. The bouncy curl falls back immediately, forcing her to peer at me through the spirals. I'm here, I say cheerfully, even though I can tell by her tone that the "you're here" statement wasn't one of greeting, but almost of warning. I'll start washing the dishes, and then you can tell me what you want me to do next. I hustle over to the sink as if having my hands wet will prevent her from unloading the bad news. She straightens and wipes her hands on her apron, I think we'd better talk. My shoulders go rigid. Is it because of Reed? Panic creeps into my voice. He didn't do it, Luce, I swear. Lucy sighs and rubs the back of her hand under her chin. The crowd of curls around her face gives her the look of a worried angel. It's not about Reed, honey, although I can't say I'm pleased about that situation either. Why don't you grab yourself a cup of coffee and a pastry, and we'll sit down? Nah, I'm good. Why delay the inevitable? Caffeine isn't going to make this conversation less awkward. She presses her lips together in slight frustration, but I don't feel like making it easy for her. Yes, I totally left her in the lurch when I disappeared a few weeks ago, but I came back and haven't missed another day since. I've never been late, even though getting here at 5 in the morning requires me to wake up before the birds. I fold my arms across my chest, lean my butt against the sink, and wait. Lucy walks over to the coffee maker and mutters something to herself about needing at least 3 cups before she feels human. Then she turns back to me. I didn't realize your father was found alive. That must have been a huge shock. Wait, this is about Steve? I say in surprise. She nods, takes another sip of courage, and says, He came to talk to me last night before closing. He did? A nervous feeling flutters in my stomach. Why the hell would Steve come to the bakery? He told me he doesn't want you to work, Lucy continues. He feels that you're missing out on activities and socialization by coming here so early in the morning. What? He can't stop you from employing me, I protest. This is beyond ridiculous. What does Steve care if I work? He's back less than a week and thinks he can dictate what I do? Bullshit. Lucy clicks her tongue. I don't know if he has that right, but I'm not really in a position to fight it. Lawyers are expensive. Her voice trails off, even as her eyes plead for understanding. I'm horrified. He threatened to sue you? Not in so many words, she admits. What exactly did he say? I push, because I can't let it go. I honestly don't understand why Steve would object to me having a job. When I mentioned it to him after Brooke's funeral, he didn't say a word about not being on board with it. He simply said he didn't think it was appropriate for you to be working so many hours and taking a job away from someone who really needs the money. He wants you to focus on your studies. He was very nice. Lucy drains her coffee and sets the mug down. I wish I could keep you on, Ella, but I can't. But I'm not taking a job away from anyone. You said yourself that you didn't have anyone who would work the morning shift. I'm sorry, honey. Her tone has a ring of finality. No matter what I say, Lucy's mind is made up. It was made up before I even got here. She bustles around the kitchen and grabs a white to-go box. Why don't you pick a few things out for your classmates? Your, stepbrothers enjoy the eclairs, right? I almost say no because I'm mad, but then I decide I might as well accept everything Lucy is offering since she's taking my job away. I stuff 12 pastries into the box and get my coat. Just as I reach the doorway, Lucy says, You're a good worker, Ella. If things change, let me know. I nod sullenly, too pissed off to mutter anything more than a thanks and goodbye. The walk to school doesn't take very long. When I arrive, the grounds of Astor Park are mostly empty, but the parking lot is surprisingly full. It's too early for most of the students to be here. The only ones who come early are the football players. Sure enough, as I approach the front doors of the main building, I hear a few shouts and faint whistles coming from the practice field. I could go over and watch Reed and Easton practice, but that sounds about as exciting as watching paste dry. Instead, I slip inside the school, shove the pastries inside my locker, and text Callum. Why is Steve dictating where I work? There's no immediate reply. It occurs to me that Callum wasn't a fan of me working at the bakery either. Reed got mad, too, when he heard about it, saying that my job implied to